outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
Wayne, are you ready for football season?
I reckon.
As an aspiring partial owner of the Green Bay Packers, do you think you guys are going to have a decent season this year?
I'm not an aspiring owner. I actually am an owner. I don't aspire to it. I have one share of the pack. Yeah, looks like a good season, but football's always, got to stay healthy and got to win games, and none of that's in concrete. So, hey, I had one of my best days of the summer, I guess, or the last 12 years, I guess, on Tuesday.
Really?
They say the best day in a boatman's life is the day he buys a boat and the day he sells it. Sold mine on Tuesday. So
nice.
It's gone.
And kind of the end of an era too, isn't it?
And not a long era. We've not been boat people all our lives. We just have had one the last 15 years or so. This one we've had for nine. But yeah, we've had a little playing with it in the summer with our grandkids. It's been a lot of fun, but they're all getting older and doing other stuff in the summers. And so it's time to close the season, which is a little bittersweet. We had a great time with it. Look back with great memories and look forward to what other memories we'll create doing something else together as families. It'll be all right. And I got some upcoming travel headed my way. I'll be in Michigan, I think, later in September, and Alaska early October, Virginia, and maybe Maryland later on in October, and then going to Miami in November and Florida. So if you're in those areas and want to tag in with me, give it a shot. May have Kyle at one or two of these. We'll have to see if you're willing to travel.
I'm ready. Let me know.
And then on December, first weekend of December, our 20s, 30s gathering in Colorado. And we're getting, that's getting kind of full. So at least by people I'm hearing, we're kind of pushing the limits of that place. So we may have to look to do another one at some point, but looking forward to that too. So, more active fall if the pandemic stays at bay and God willing and whatever, we get to do that kind of stuff.
So is it wild for you to be back on the travel circuit again after a year and a half of different projects and being at home with Sarah?
I've made one trip, Kyle. I don't think that counts as being back on the road yet. I have no idea. I have no idea how it's going to sort out. I enjoyed the last trip I took and the people I was with. I'm looking forward to the opportunities that are ahead of me, but the airport stuff and being away from Sarah and all that stuff is a little bit harder now that I've gotten used to being home a lot. Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And I want to welcome you to the God Journey.
So what's the best thing you've heard this week, Wayne?
You know, I actually had somebody say to me this week, and I try to remember who it was and what context it was, but somebody came up to me and said, you know what the best thing I heard this week is? And I went, oh my gosh, this is going to be a thing. Other people are going to do it with me too, which is great because you hear people's best things they heard. But I saw a quote last week by Walter Brueggemann, and I don't really know who he is. He's a theologian of sorts, I guess. This was the quote. It was a meme on the net. It said, the prophetic tasks of the church are to tell the truth in a society that lives in illusion, grieve in a society that practices denial, and express hope in a society that lives in despair.
Wow.
That's a pretty good list.
That is a really good list.
I like that. Tell the truth to a society that lives in illusion. I would say delusion, but illusion is okay.
Mm-hmm.
Grieve in a society that practices denial and express truth in a society that lives in despair.
Mm.
What about you? What's the best thing you've heard this week?
Well, the best thing I heard this week was actually from a podcast about parenting teens. The quote was, no bad choice is beyond the reach of love. And that was a really intriguing one because they were really processing about how to help your teen move in a gracious and wholehearted way into who God created them to be. And what does that look like? Does that look like saving them from some of their circumstances or their issues? Or does that look like walking through some of those circumstances and issues with them? So often parents, they view or they hold on tight to their teens because they view that there are some behaviors that can't be corrected. That once you make this decision, that it's out beyond the reach of love. And in that context came that quote of there's no decision that's beyond the reach of love.
And it would seem that a parent that would think there is, a decision that goes beyond the reach of love, really the parenting's more about them, right? And reflecting on their character. You know, my child's an embarrassment to me, or my child's a failure.
Yeah.
It's more about, I'm focused on how other people are going to perceive me because my child made a bad choice, rather than how do I love my child through their bad choice and through the consequences of that bad choice? And how does love and unfortunately, among too many Christians I know, parenting is kind of a competition sport. You kind of, you know, if your kid's doing well, you kind of take some merit badges from that. And if somebody else's kid's doing bad, you kind of look down on them for that instead of loving each other and all of us and realizing growing up's rough to do and not all kids get through it making the best choices. And how do you love them when they make the... I get a lot of email like that. How do I love my kid when they're doing this or doing that? I just say, well, love, just keep loving. Just keep being in their life, you know, and do what love leads you to do.
It was really interesting. One of the comments that one of the podcasters made was that if you are able to build a foundation of trust and love and build that up in their life early on and continue that and keep it consistent, that no matter how hard they rebel, eventually they will come back to you because you've proven yourself to be a trustworthy and loving individual. What are your thoughts on that one?
Yeah, I think
having parented teens.
Yeah, trying to prove that is one thing, but if you're that kind of person who always makes a place for your kids to come back from any kind of failure, mistake, bad choice, even backsliding, whatever, I think it will serve you well. I think that's what Scripture demonstrates. The prodigal son story is a great one where the father is there when the son comes back. The son makes a turn, father's running down the road to meet him. And I think that if you are that person, because I do think people get led astray, they do make choices that are hurtful. They may even make choices to separate. And sometimes love lets separation happen. It does, but it's always ready to reconcile the moment there's a turn back. And I love that about God, and I love that about a lot of relationships I've had that have some have gone bad for seasons and then turned good again. And if you just keep your heart ready to receive people back in, I think when people are ready, they'll come back to it.
So how did you choose or how did you decide or navigate, you and Sarah, when to help rescue your teens from some of their life choices or their decisions versus being there and supporting them, but allowing them to go through them? How did you guys make that decision or navigate that?
Well, I'd say we're always ready to rescue.
Okay.
But only when they're ready to be rescued. You can't rescue somebody that doesn't want to be rescued. So you keep your heart ready and you look to rescue. Now, rescue to me doesn't always mean you mitigate their circumstances or the consequences of bad decisions. I think a lot of parents do that where kids are making bad choices, particularly when they're younger, and they just manage around all that, making sure my child never suffers because love would never let someone suffer the consequences of a bad choice. And I don't think that's true. I think love does let people suffer consequences because that's where there's learning. That's where you learn to live differently in the world. And just make sure the consequence is not the disaffection of the parent. That's not a consequence. That can be a false consequence where I'm so embarrassed or angry at my kid that I withdraw because I'm embarrassed for them or whatever. But if affection is the constant, then I mean, it can happen where, you know, kid gets arrested or whatever, and the parents are all about, you know, getting him out of it, get him off the hook, get him.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes, and I don't know, I don't think there's a 3 steps to figure out when you do and when you don't mitigate consequences. But I think I would fail on the side of walking with them through most of the consequences. And if I had leading to mitigate some, then I would do that as a point of leading.
Okay.
And I think that's true of my life in God. You know, you make choices and there are consequences that come and you learn from those consequences. You really do. Even if it's, fortunately, my kids never went to jail, but I've known kids that have from families that are great families. And that can be a turning point in a kid's life. And I've also seen kids always rescued from that. Parents hire big fancy lawyers and get their kid off from something that they actually did. And then the kid doesn't learn anything. And he'll be right back there again and down the road. And you've got to keep rescuing. So, which we talked about probably last week on the podcast, God loves us. He's with us. He doesn't always take us out of the circumstances that make us uncomfortable. And even not even when they're just consequences. Maybe it's just, man, the world's a bad world and bad stuff happens to people. And he doesn't always just jump in and rescue us from that. Sometimes he walks us through that. And honestly, I think that's where you learn to love. That's where you learn to have compassion for people who are broken. Because I always say generosity more flows from poor people to poor people than from rich people to poor people.
Yeah, and I think that's very true that so often, you know, even as being a parent of a young child, there's this, well, do I want them to suffer and struggle? And how much do I allow of that? And what is healthy? And now as a counselor in the modern education system, I regularly am confronted with kiddos that their parents have rescued them from any and every challenge possible. And yet then they're wondering why they have all these behavioral issues and why they're failing their classes and why all these things are happening. And yet it's like, well, they never had to feel any kind of weight of their actions. They never had to take responsibility for any of them. And so now they're looking to you to sort it out, because that's what you've done for the last 10, 15 years. And so, you know, what's in their minds, what's going to change? It's really intriguing.
Yeah, would you say that's what you draw them to is what you, what you win them to is what you draw them to, or something like that? It's the same thing.
What you win them with is what you're drawing them to. Yeah.
Yeah. If you win them to mom and dad always protect me and make sure nothing bad ever happens to me, then they'll become very weak people, I think, overall.
Yeah.
But, you know, if my kid's going to reach for a hot stove, I'm not going to say, oh, I'm going to give them the consequence of touching that stove. They'll learn from that. No, I'm going to jump in and intrude on that kind of moment. Though,
yeah,
I did have a kid grab a hot stove when no one was looking, and it taught him. It taught him an awful lot. But, and then you got the really, really abusive parent that puts their kid's hand on a hot stove to teach him a lesson. Yeah. That's really, really abusively evil. So it's not an exact science, man. It's really, what does love lead me to do? But to at least know, love doesn't always pull people out of their circumstances. Doesn't always do that.
Does God ever set us up to fail?
What kind of God is that?
Not a great one.
Some would argue that's the tree in the garden, right? God set us up to fail.
Yeah, exactly.
I wouldn't see it that way.
You know, I've heard that argument, but that's, I've bumped into a few different situations recently with some very close friends of parents actually setting their kids up to fail in some incredibly painful ways. And it's just baffling to me. Like how,
like what's it for instance?
Okay. So a young man that was working cattle, and the dad in the situation always took point. Right. And they were the ones that were always leading. The young man was, you know, he's a 19, 20 something year old and wanted to just try something. He saw something a little differently than the way that his dad did. And he's like, hey, can we just try this? The dad in his mind was like, well, that's not my way. And so literally did things to like move some gates, did some things to try to make it so when they were moving the cattle and they were doing this whole big thing, that the cattle would blow out and the way that the son was hoping to do it would fall apart. And then it would just prove that the dad was always right, reinforcing the way that the dad should always be listened to. The dad should always be adhered to. But then the son's way worked. And at the end of it, the dad literally admitted, well, I actually set you up to fail on that. And I didn't think you were going to be able to make it, but you proved me wrong and you came out on top of it. Does a loving parent do that to a child?
No, I wouldn't think so. I've never done that with my kids. I think you set up your kids to succeed. What you try to do. Now, that doesn't mean they'll make all great choices, so some things may turn out badly, but I can't imagine the scenario in which I would actively work to sabotage something my child wanted to try and do. Can't imagine that.
Well, you know, I'm thinking about, like, with Elle, too. You know, as she is... So my family is laughing because she is such a daredevil. Jess and I have figured out that there's fears, there's natural fears, right? There's innate fears that we have, but then a lot of fears come from social influence. So what our parents teach us, what the culture around us teaches us. So we've tried to really foster and encourage Elle's sense of adventure and risk-taking.
So you got her base jumping it too?
She's getting pretty close. Oh, like literally I was out shooting my bow and I turn around. I took my eye off of her for 5 seconds. I turn around and she's on the top, literally sitting on the top of a 10-foot ladder that I had set up for some practicing stuff. She climbed up by herself, no fear whatsoever, and was just sitting there watching me shooting the bow from the very top step, just like hanging out, no issues whatsoever. And I'm like, oh my gosh, if you fell off of there, child, you'd bust an arm, you'd bust your neck. Like, this is not good. And so then I went over and I spotted her and she climbed up and down and up and down the ladder probably a half dozen times. But like everybody is laughing because they're like, well, are you setting your kid up to fail because you're not teaching them to be afraid of heights and all this stuff? And like, well, I don't want to install that fear in her. I want to give her wisdom on what, how to be safe, but I don't want to install a fear in her to not adventure and explore.
Plus, mommy will get you if that kid falls off a 10-foot ladder under your watch.
It's true. Yeah. Yeah, that is, that is true. I should be more afraid of that. That's a legitimate fear.
Yeah. And whether she's afraid or not, I'm afraid of that.
I'm afraid of the consequences.
Yeah, I think setting him up to fail would be a thing. I mean, you're not doing that with her. Even, I mean, you're helping her learn to climb a ladder or whatever, but you might say, hey, you know, be careful, make sure mommy and daddy's watching. I mean, they don't even let people climb rock walls without roped in, so they're not going to fall and break their necks. Yeah, so I think there's learning prudence in the face of risk-taking is always a good idea. I knew a kid thought he was Superman, jumped off of the roof of his house, and fortunately landed on the hood of a car, and it kind of had some give in the tires, so knocked the wind out of him. Otherwise, he was okay, and he goes, guess I can't fly. And that was his lesson, but no one was facilitating that. Crawled out his bedroom window onto a roof and then took a dive.
Jeez.
He's like 5 years old or something, thought he could fly.
Wow. Okay. Is that child a pilot now?
No.
Oh, okay.
That kid has had his share of other unwise choices. So did you lay in food in August for the coming need?
For the coming need?
Yeah. Did you do that?
No.
I was actually asked in August by someone I know really well, said, you're stocking up food. And I went, what do you mean am I stocking up food? I said, well, there's going to be shortages. I said, and what's causing these shortages? And he goes, well, when he returns. And I'm thinking, Jesus, what are we talking about? So I said,
what?
Yeah. What are we talking about? Who's returning? He said, well, the president. I said, Biden is returning from what? No, the other guy. I'm going, Trump? Yeah, Trump's coming back in August. This is like early in August. And there's going to be all kinds of shortages. And you should be stocking up on food. And my answer was, no, sorry, not going there. And trying to even talk to this person, it's weird because I would say, okay, you know they thought this would happen in January. Trump would come back, and he didn't.
Mm-hmm.
They even tried to make it happen on January 6th. It didn't happen. March was the next date it was going to happen. And there were so many people, I guess, saying August, Trump will reassert the presidency. And so when I asked him, I said, what mechanism would cause that to happen? You're talking about a coup. So is the military behind him? Is there enough Proud Boys out there, whatever, who's going to make an armed assault on the White House? What is the mechanism for this to even happen? And they couldn't answer it. There was just, we know it's going to happen. And now it didn't, obviously, but I hear some have moved the date to September. So we've gone through this January, March, August, now September, and there's actually people. And I even asked, even if somehow Trump got back in the White House, which,
correct,
you know, without an election, it's not going to happen, but how did that affect food shortages? And there was no answer for that. It just will. No amount of processing that with them I was the stupid one for not believing it and not stocking up on food. Now they've got a lot of extra food, which is fine. They can still eat it in September, but it made me start thinking about a lot of things because, I mean, there's been a struggle in our culture with what we've talked about it here. I wrote a blog about it, ticked a lot of people off about delusions.
Mm-hmm.
And people believe things with absolute certainty, and then they turn out not to be true. And you don't catch that a lot of people, I wish there were, there's some, but a lot of people are saying, well, if that person told me that was going to happen and it didn't, why am I still listening to them when they move it to September or October or whatever? It was like when you were a kid, probably, but I was an adult. There was 88 reasons why Jesus was coming in 88. It was a whole numerology study of the Bible. And then it didn't happen, obviously. So then the next book he published was 89 reasons Jesus coming in 89. And I'd got a few calculations off, so now they're all fixed. Well, he didn't come in 89 either. And I think it is so easy to speculate. It is so easy to profit from speculating. It is so easy to believe somebody's speculating. You mentioned the football season, okay?
Yeah.
There'll be all kinds. There's all kinds of announcers already this week already said who's going to be in the Super Bowl, who's going to win the games on Sunday, who's going to. And you can prognosticate all you want when you speculate, because truth isn't important. It's just what you believe. And yet the most important part of believing is the truth that's behind it. Because if you believe what isn't true, so I was going to ask you, Kyle, is there any time you can remember in your life where you really passionately believed something and it turned out not to be true?
Ooh, that's a good question. So our family bought into the 2000 scare, the Y2K scare.
Yeah.
So that one was an interesting one because I didn't really know the research behind it. Like, I didn't know what was going to happen when the year 2000 switch came. But what I did know is that we had 3 years worth of food stores in the basement. I did know that we shut off the power and practiced how we would live as a family if we didn't have access to any kind of power or running water, like how we would get it and how we would use it, how we would make food, how we would survive. So December 31st, 1999, and I remember sitting there and being like, I don't really want to face this. Like, I don't want to, like, if this is going to roll over and the apocalypse is going to happen and brownouts are going to happen and all this stuff is going to implode, I guess I just want to wake up tomorrow and deal with it. On January 1st, 2000, I woke up and the first thing I did was went and switched on a light switch to see if the world had imploded. And the light came on, nothing happened, everything's moved on. And I was like, huh, okay. That was like a family system thing that we were pretty caught into. But as an individual, that's a really good question. I'm going to have to think on that one. Do you have something that you've bought into that you like really believed and it came out as to not being true?
I would say yes, a lot of things. I would say when I was growing up and pastoring, really thinking there were institutional systemic answers for what would fix the body of Christ. I think a lot of my theology about the cross turned out to be wrong, and it didn't lead me into Father's affection. It led me even, and I've said this so many times, the people who believe in an appeasement-based view of the cross, that Jesus satisfied in himself the wrath of God, still live every day trying to keep on God's good side by doing enough Bible reading, church attending, whatever. I mean, they're still appeasing.
Yeah.
And I don't believe in the appeasement-based view of the cross anymore. I think it was I have an affection-based view of the cross, which I've talked about a lot. That changed when I was 42. Mm-hmm. I think there are still things I'm discovering today that I go, wow, see, I thought that was an answer. Even scriptures I've read and interpreted one way, now I interpret another. So I would say, yeah, I think there have been a lot of things. I didn't get caught in the Y2K thing. I'm trying to think of some cultural iconic thing that I got caught into. I didn't get caught in the 88 reasons just come in 88. I think when I was a younger man, we never thought we'd get to 1980 or 1970 without Jesus coming. And I was, you know, really motivated by that to try and be good and be righteous and all that good stuff. But it was all human effort stuff. So yeah, I think one of the first podcasts we did way back in the beginning of the God Journey did with Tom Moen out of Tulsa. He had four things God uses. One of the things is for someone that God wants to work through. One of the things, he needs to believe in a heresy so strongly that when God opens his eyes, he'll be humble about truth from then on. And he said it more eloquently, but I've always remembered that. I think, and he talks about needing a betrayal too, because a betrayal will change the way you live. But I think that's true. I think there's a different, I guess when I know people who get caught up in these, what I think are untrue on the face of it. I didn't see any way, for instance, Trump was coming back to be president. So on the face of it, it's absurd, but there's no humility either in, you know, I'm concerned this might happen. It's not that. This is going to happen, and you're a fool if you don't believe it. Or when it doesn't happen, there's no humility about, wow, how did I get sucked into that? There's always an excuse why it didn't happen and why it will yet happen. And I think that's what concerns me. When Jesus says that, which I think is just a provocative statement, when the light that is in you is darkness, how great is that darkness?
Oof.
You know, if what I honestly believe is the light,
mm-hmm.
and basing my whole way, even if I've heard a lie about someone, so I'm treating them as if the lie is true.
Yeah.
And I'm not even second guessing the lie. And I guess that's what I've noticed. People who I know believe in truth hold truth very lightly. There's a humility behind it. I think this is what I see. And let's see if it's true. Let's see if it sorts out. And people who seem to be more easily trapped into a delusion, or I'll just say speculation. I like when Paul says to Timothy and Titus, avoid speculation. Stay away from anybody who's speculating, whether it's end times, whether it's anything. Because speculating is so easy to do and manipulate people by doing it. Deal with what is. Deal with what you see today. So rather orient to the future with the uncertainty of I don't know what's going to happen, rather than believe a speculation that may promise me some kind of comfort, even with the Y2K, because I'm prepared. I mean, that's the comfort. The comfort's not the economic doomsday. I mean, I heard one guy that I've read a number of books and respected, and he absolutely said, leading up to Y2K, this will usher in a worldwide depression. I'll stake everything in ministry I've ever said on it. And when I hear that, I'm going, okay, first of all, you're going to be wrong. Second of all, it's that false certainty.
Yeah.
Or like the man I knew who told his wife that God told him to have an affair on her, because it would teach her how to handle betrayal. And that would be important for her to help other people. And this guy was sincere. I know everybody listening is going, okay, so he did the God told me so he could have sex with this woman. No, honestly, I know the guy. He really had been tricked demonically into believing that this is what God wanted him to do. It wasn't just a flimsy excuse to try and blow one past his wife. When the light that is in you is darkness, how great is that darkness?
Mm.
And so we have a whole lot of things right now in our culture that, you know, we talk about, you and I, and I'm not trying to apply this to vaccines. I know people are going to get really nervous, but some of the email I've had since my comment about the vaccine, I'm going to read some of it because I think it's important to process, expand the conversation, let other people in.
Yeah.
Now, there's something that's true about that. Either in 3 years, my skin is going to fall off and rot because I got a vaccine, which some people believe, or and not everybody who's against the vaccine, or I mean, not who's not taking the vaccine is not taking it for that reason. Others just think that it was developed too quickly, or they're kind of reacting to the medical deal, whatever. But if in fact I'm the one that's deluded, I'm going to pay a consequence for that up the road, I think, or get a healing from Jesus or whatever. And if other people who kind of are anti-vaccine for reasons, and I think there are reasons that people are anti-vaccine that are appropriate. I think there are more reasons that are not. I think there's more lies about it and more fears and speculation that's caused people to worry. So I think that's there as well. But I guess what I'm thinking through a lot of this and things going on in my own life, truth is the gravity of the kingdom, not belief.
Mm.
I think we've gotten to belief is what, you know, I believe it's true. I have peace in my heart about this. I've known a lot of people make really bad choices saying they've got God's peace in their heart about this, whether it's marrying an unbeliever or cheating their business partner or lying to somebody. God told me to. I mean, God told me to do this. So I've known a lot of bad stuff there, as much as I want people to listen to God and follow him. But I'll go back to what I said. So truth is the gravity of the kingdom, not belief. Mm. So it's not that you feel peace about it. It's not that you believe some speculation that's wrong. There's no power in that. The power is when what I believe is actually true and who I believe in is worthy of that belief or that trust. And I think some of us, when we talk about learning to listen to God and follow God, I can hear a lot of pushback that is, well, this is what I believe. And my next thought is whether you believe or what I believe isn't the issue. The issue is what I'm believing the truth as best I see it.
Mm.
Or is it just, I'm believing something, going back to our language last week, because it's my comfort zone. I'm comforted by this belief, whether it's true or not. My heart leans back toward, man, we got to find what's true, always. And I'll go back to what I said about people who seem to be deluded have a weird certainty that makes me quiver. And people who are more, I think, more oriented toward what's really true have a greater humility as to how they hold that truth. Because speculative, you can be confident about anything. But when you're really worried about is this true or not, like as regards if we go back to the vaccine, is our common good reason for a lot of us to get vaccinated to help protect people? Is that true or not? Or is it true that this is a vaccine that science has manipulated and that Bill Gates is using to put a brain chip in us, or as others think, as one person told me, it was to cull out millions of people so the world wouldn't be overpopulated, which, you know, as I always said, the same people who cut open my chest are the same people telling me this is a vaccine that's good for all of us. Is it perfect? No. So people can say, well, I know so-and-so got the vaccine. They got a breakthrough thing. Yes, that happens. The 2% of people, that happens too. I don't think I'm invincible now about the COVID because I've had a vaccination. But more of us are protected from getting it, severe cases, and spreading it. And when you hear healthcare workers who really struggle with the fact that there are people who could get vaccinated to help them not have to be so at risk in their jobs and not understand it. And I know, so I'm going to read some of the email because that gets it. Because I'm not trying to say these people are deceived. I'm going to read actually all across the spectrum. But said, I've walked this journey with Jesus for a long time now and have listened to the God journey off and on for years. I'm so thankful and grateful for the encouragements and reminders along the way. I have a Father in heaven who loves me more than I know. I have not agreed with everything you say, which is awesome. I don't agree with everything I say either. Ask me a year or two later. And I know that's okay. I believe that your heart is to help people to walk with and come to know, trust, and love, the most enduring presence in the universe, and not Wayne Jacobson. I think you missed this here, though, speaking about the vaccine. Not because of which side you landed on, of course. Have an opinion. Do what you believe is right. I think there's a difference between having an opinion and being opinionated. One is more flexible and teachable than the other. You missed it, I think, because you pointed to a side, not merely as your opinion, but as fact, and not simply to Christ. Look to him. He'll show you what he wants you to stand. And the message was laced with manipulation and shame.
Hmm.
That's how one person took it. And we've tried to correspond a bit. I don't know that it was laced with manipulation and shame. I was talking about the contrast between a common good that it takes a huge number of people to go along with versus trying to just decide if it's me or not or risk-free or whether or not. And I do have an opinion on that, yeah. Some of my opinion is anchored when I believe to be true. So then I believe other people, just like the guy who told me he was going to have this affair, he had this affair on his wife that God told him to. I don't sit there and say, wow, if God told you to, good choice. I mean, my next thing is, dude, there's no way in God's green earth he told you to cheat on your wife. There's no absolute way. And because, well, that's opinionated and that shame. I don't know what to say because I do think truth's important. And there are times that, I want people to listen to God and follow him, but if your quote-unquote listening to God and following him is leading you down a path that's hurtful, I'm going to warn you. I'm going to speak up. Now, you're free to reject it. I've got no ability to make you, believe me. And is that shamefully manipulative? This person thinks it was.
I think part of the challenge, too, is just how, you know, how we navigate that and the heart that we have behind it, right?
I think one of my frustrations, and I'm sure comes out when I shared it, is there's been so much misinformation about Trump, about the pandemic, about vaccines that the conservative Christian community has bought into that I think are dead wrong. And so, was there a frustration there? I'm sure there was. Because I get frustrated watching people, just like this person that I know a month ago, telling me to stock food and all that stuff. I'm going, what to eat? That's frustrating that people believe stuff that turns out not to be true.
For me, the hard part in this is two of my best friends, and they're sending me all of these articles out of Israel, out of several medical institutions in the United States that are showing me counter information or that are showing me reasons and rationale as to why I shouldn't get the vaccine. And so for me, that's a hard space because I'm like, man, I don't know what to do here. I have a hard time trying to figure out where the truth is in this. And I think you're absolutely right. Like, as far as the difference between holding the truth lightly and being curious and teachable and being able to adjust that, versus the hard certainty of I know X, Y, and Z. You know, I know this is, has to be true. I know you, and you have to get the vaccine in order to save your life versus, you know, should we be doing, you know, all the different rationale, all the conversations that are around the vaccine. As far as like the shaming piece, I think it's a genuine just question of where are we landing in regards to our certainty, where we're placing our hope, and what's the heart behind the conversation we're having? You know, are we shaming somebody or trying to manipulate somebody into taking a vaccine or believing X or believing Y? Or are we bringing a conversation to the table and saying, okay, this is something we genuinely need to wrestle with because it's worth trying to find out the truth, not just the belief, not just the emotional, but what is God's truth in the midst of this? What is kingdom principle? What is wisdom here? What is the truth behind it? If you're afraid of having that genuine conversation, then I think we're in a really bad spot. If we can't really wrestle with that, if the fear is too great to wrestle with that.
I don't know about the fear, but the timeliness of if this vaccine is helping.
Yeah.
And since the surge seems to be among the unvaccinated, I don't know. You can always find a few medical people who will come out on something to throw a bugaboo in something. I don't think it's disputable that the vaccine has really helped curtail the virus among those who mm-hmm. have us vaccinated. I don't know how that helps us get to anything that's going to be valuable for the culture as a whole.
Yeah.
And I know people who are concerned about the vaccination. Oh, I love hearing that, man. Israel's got a huge outburst and they're all vaccinated and they've done more than anybody else. And there may be a good reason for that, but the reason may not be the vaccination was a failure or mm-hmm. that their skin's going to fall off in 3 years or whatever the things are. So that's where I'm concerned. I like this letter from Lisa. She said, vaccines, political divide, and the state of our nation has brought me to a point where I had determined to take a media break. On one hand, my daughter and son-in-law want me to get a vaccine as they have a six-year-old who is at high risk and she gets of getting COVID. On the other hand, my family in Oregon believe the vaccine is just a step towards the mark of the beast and send me information on efficacy, safety, etc. My research has not led to a clear decision. I believe what happened next is God poking me. Because I was browsing your website and found the Embracing God series. I've listened to it twice now. The first time I think I started crying on number 8 for no reason. Then the next session and comment that God can put you on your heart a thought that brings us to tears, so I cried again. The one thing I've heard through listening to him, the series, is that love leads the way. What choice I make should be one based upon love and not my research. Yeah. You stated that every circumstance is a chance for God's glory to be revealed, and that we need to look beyond the illusions. I have thought of the pandemic as something to be feared, but what if it is an opportunity to show love for others and trust that God can cover me regardless of whether or not something I do is safe? I keep coming back to what does love tell me to do? I want to live in him, not live in fear.
I love that.
I do too.
What does love tell me to do? Yes. I love that.
Yeah, because so much of our speculative stuff is based on fear. And so much even on the pro-vaccine side is based on fear as well. Fear of what? Packing hospitals, fear of this, fear of that. So it's not that one side's fearful and the other side's not. But I love that she's saying, you know, research doesn't get you there. You can find a naysayer on either side of any argument where if you're apprehensive about vaccines or apprehensive about medicine, you can find an excuse not to take it. If you're, you know, pro, just everybody needs to get a shot. Now businesses are changing the rules. You're going to get vaccinated or pay more insurance premiums or not keep your job. I mean, there's definitely that whole fight in society. And I find with you, I think it's sad that we can't have a conversation that leads to the truth. And I would even say that most of the God Journey people who've written me about this have been very grateful that I mentioned what I said about vaccines. But the people who are not come at me really hard, really judgmental, really, you know, I violated something in them and my theology about God leading people or whatever, that I found a bit disconcerting. We probably couldn't even have that conversation here on the God Journey, unfortunately. If we all got us in a big tent and said, let's try and talk about this, because the polarization of what we believe is true is so strong. I guess I want to put in a word for, you know what, we got to make sure that what we say we believe is actually true. Because the fact that you believe it is not where safety is. It's not where wholesomeness is. It's actually aligning ourselves with what God reveals, who God is, and what's actually going on in the world around us. And I think a lot of our religious leaders have not been helpful in that regard over the last 2 years or more.
How so?
And some people think I'm not helpful in that either. Well, just because of all the conspiracy theories and the Trump stuff and the, you know, it's just not been people who really look for a loving way to respond to the world, but a raise the fences and haul in the wagons and raise the drawbridge. And, you know, we're going to do what's right for us and not think in a wider sense of the community as a whole. And that, again, for those of you that aren't vaccinated, I'm not saying that's why you didn't get vaccinated. Yeah. I have met an awful lot of people who are not vaccinated for those reasons, which is why I talked about it. Other people may have a good reason, a good research, a good whatever. And I didn't want this podcast to be about vaccines again. I want it to be about making sure that we're not invited into speculation. We're invited into what's true, because that's what matters. And if I'm wrong about the vaccine, then it will matter at some point, right? It will. Because it's not what I believe about it. It's what's true about it that matters. And I like holding that truth loosely. I mean, I do. I have some opinions about it, but I'm also listening to see what else we can discover.
And I feel like that's the difference between when you're living a life in love, right? It gives you that permission to be able to hold it lightly and say, Lord, this is what I think is true. This is what I've experienced of you. This is the space that I feel like you've drawn me into. But if it's not, I give you full permission to lead me somewhere else. Where does your love? Because I'm secure in your love.
Yeah, show me.
I trust your love. I trust your work in my life to where, because, you know, as you were talking about the things that, like, lies that I had bought into. I mean, I can't, when you took it to the space about the spiritual truth and the things that, like, lies that I've believed or really bought into about life or the way that people do, I mean, oh my gosh, the list could go on and on. And yet that's the beauty of living in his love and just that conversational relationship, is he's untangling that. And I don't have to hold it on to it with that certainty, because I know, and well, I'm still learning to live in that foundation of love first before anything else. That I can be certain of is his love.
Think if we're in a place where we don't see ourselves still letting God untangle lies in our heart, we're probably in a pretty risky place.
Yeah.
If we think we have ascended the mountain of truth and can defend it, that's probably the first sign that we may have a problem.
Agreed.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.